Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Oh, hello everyone. It is the Red Men Originals podcast and it is my absolute pleasure to spend the vast majority of the next hour, 90 minutes, talking about Liverpool beating Man United alongside Steve Hoare, Steve Plunkett and Dan Clubb. Particularly Steve Plunkett, who was unceremoniously booted off the Final Word show this morning.
Sorry. What happened was I thought I hadn't booked a second guest and then I forgot I'd texted Sam. So Steve was sat in ready to go and then Sam turned up. So Steve took the hit. But in fairness, I think it's worked out well because having both of us on this show together, having just done that together, might not have worked. So
I don't need my check and everything, mate.
You would live.
I was there.
Tantalisingly close.
One for the team. Sam Walker, well done, mate.
Yeah, you'll get more. More people listening to this one, I think, or if you're watching it, yeah. So we put
was
you on the main
game
one.
Anyway,
yeah, you know, who cares really? Not much happens.
Only the best final word ever, but never mind.
Yeah. Yes. Anyway, it was good stuff. Ultimately, all is well that ends well. We're here. We've got a fresh cast of people to talk about this game. We're all very, very excited. The kickoff question. It's a slightly different approach to it this time around. Steve O'Hare, one of our club legend subscribers, has asked us to finish the sentence. Beating Man United 7-0 feels like thank you.
Just perfection.
Give you the whole sentence.
Oh, beating Manchester United 7-0 feels like perfection.
Beating Man United 7-0 feels like as fucking good as it gets.
Beating Man United 7-0 feels like that feeling you get when you've just had a jolly good session of eating Haribo jellies.
There was an opportunity there. Beating Man United 7-0 feels like a mad Hunter S. Thompson style drug-induced fever dream that I
Paige,
know,
I'm one of them today, probably.
That I know happened and I feel so real. And yet, I'm sat here questioning whether it could possibly have been real because we're not that far away from the world. We were like, is this possible? Should we, how is this game going to go? Are Man United going to cause us problems? I think Steve thought we were going to lose 2-0.
No, never.
Just lose.
No, never. Go back to my predictions on both shows and I said we were going to win.
Off camera.
Off camera, Steve Hoare was not confident. I was.
So was Graeme Souness.
Yeah, why not? Because, I know we capitulated against Real Madrid, but, we also battered them for a spell. And Manchester United are not Real Madrid. I don't want to shock anyone because they feel like they are, but ultimately Manchester United are a Europa League side that we have just battered.
My thinking was going into, I'll be honest, I was a bit, when I got here on the Sunday, I was a bit pessimistic, and that was only because I thought that the two main strengths that they had were counterproductive to what I would call our weaknesses. You know, I thought Rashford on that left hand side would cause problems, and I thought their midfield would dominate, and neither would true. Ten Hag kind of pepped himself a little bit, didn't he? Like, why did you put Marcus Rashford up front? Everyone knows Liverpool, if you're going to get through Liverpool, go wide. It was very odd that he did that. Bald managers turn up at Anfield again. It's another bad week for the ball. Another ball. He had a shocker. But this time it wasn't a ref. It happened to just be the other team's manager.
He doesn't like that. That certain people in the media are saying they're a counter-attacking side. He doesn't want to be that. So by playing Vigors in the 10 and getting people beyond him, he's trying to stop that feeling. But like Paul says, first half against Real Madrid, if you can replicate that form, nobody can live with you, including Real Madrid. So we've had a little prelude to what we might be seeing going forward.
He did himself no favours though in the build-up, does he, by sort of playing down the Anfield atmosphere? Like, he hasn't read that playbook, has he? People talk about Anfield Anfield, why do you always do it? Yeah, and then he's absolutely pepped himself with to put Weghorst, who's like 6'6" as a 10, makes absolutely no sense. It's almost ridiculous having Dan Burn at left back. He's just nuts. Yeah. But I suppose in his defence, in his very minute defence, some of his key players who you kind of rely upon and you go, they're your big players, and they're the reason why United have got better this season. Your Casemiro's, your Varane's, had absolute stinkers. Yeah. Lisandro Martinez had put in that category as well. Like, individually, not just as a collective, some of their really important lads had horror shows.
It's funny, isn't it? Fernandez as well.
Well, Fernandez.
Sticking him left wing was just, yeah, man. So he did himself no favours. But I was worried that day, but like I say, go back to the question. I thought he'd go right long and often to Rashford, and I thought Casemiro would win them the ball back. And I was worried that we were going to get counted on. Because I don't think even though we're at home, I don't think Liverpool would ever, we're going to take a back foot. Jürgen's team selection told us that. You know, when he picked Harvey Elliott, he was going like, we're going for this. And I was thinking, ooh, we might be vulnerable here to the counter attack, but if anything, it was another masterstroke from the manager to put Harvey Elliott on that right hand side as well. Yeah. He's basically gone, not arsed what Man United attacking Rashford or whoever they play over here. We're gonna do the opposite. We're gonna pin them back by having Trent, Salah, Elliott tripling up on Luke Shaw, who, you know, he was spinning around. He was on, you know, spinning everywhere as well. Martinez couldn't help him. So I thought Jürgen, you know, talk about like everything about the game in terms of tactics and everything, or you know, the stupid Ten Hag comments before the game and him doing a bit, getting his team a bit wrong. But like, Jürgen schooled him a little bit.
Nailed it.
He just said, right, well, what's the best way of not letting Casemiro dominate the ball? Just find space around him. Don't go into his area. We'll play where we want. So Harvey Elliott was almost like playing right wing, almost right next to Mo Salah, and he was saying, Casemiro, well, if you want to come over here, sound. And he didn't want to go there. So I thought Jürgen, like I say, it was brilliant. And I fucking love him, don't get me wrong. But I think he absolutely schooled Ten Hag tactically as well. Like, Ten Hag made mistakes, but in we got the tactics board out in the little chess match. And Klopp doesn't get enough credit for that, really. You know what I mean? Yes, the passion and the desire and the getting the lads together and being a good guy. But like, tactically, Liverpool exploited a big weakness in Man United. And like I say, we'll see how they've... Other teams will have seen that and gone, hang on a minute. Why are we just playing the ball into the middle all the time where Casemiro can mop us up? Let's get him over here where he doesn't want to be.
United aren't there yet either. And they feel like they are. And it's hilarious because of the complacency I thought they crept in and the way they were talking about. You can see it by the pundits. You can see it by the fans. You know, I think deep down they thought it was...
Time to win.
Exactly. They're not the finished article. And so they're not capable of sorting it out for themselves on the pitch enough yet. And that's one thing, that's the difference, is that Liverpool some of the older lads have struggled for us this season, but we've still got them. And when they're on form and they've got enough in the tank to be able to deliver, they're the kind of players you can alter how a game goes in a game because they've done it at the highest level in and out. And United have got those players, but it's Varane and Casemiro who are good players, really good players, but they're not Man United players. I mean, I know Varane's been there a little longer, hasn't he? But they're not, I don't know, maybe they're not enough. And in addition, going back to my point, they've also played a lot of footy in the last couple of weeks. I know they don't want to blame fatigue or whatever, but it's there. We've dealt with it. It's a huge thing. They're not the finished article, and it's boss.
I reference me, because I quick going back to it. Like, when we were on the rise with Jürgen and we still couldn't win at Old Trafford, and it was a barrier we had to get to, and then when we did it, we fucking did it. Yeah. And we did it, you know, it feels a little bit like that with them. Like, they are on the way up, but like, Anfield's a different challenge, and you can't just say, you know, like Ten Hag, same pitch, same, like all that nonsense. I think you've got to embrace it and go,
I think they've lost. I think they think that we're a mid-table team.
Yeah.
And we're not. Mm. We're a team that was the best team in the world 9 months ago, and I've really slipped, but we've still got the capability on our day to get back up to that level, and our best is well better than their best. Yeah. And that's the thing sometimes that gets lost in this is that if the levels were what the levels were, that game should have been close. That, because when we've been we spent ages just we call it crossing on the stairs. They were on the way down, we were on the way up, and we just couldn't quite get that win against them. And it was the Shaqiri, the two Shaqiri goal one. That was a huge win at the time because we'd had loads of really close games. They'd nicked a couple here. We'd had loads of draws and that kind of thing. And that finally felt like a watershed moment. And then we had that last season at Old Trafford. This result isn't a fair reflection of actually the level of both sides, but it is telling that if United were as good as they're supposed to be, they'd have been able to hold Liverpool back a lot better than they did. We're nowhere near as bad as they think we are, and they're nowhere near as good as they think they are, which is where it is. Let's fast forward a little bit from the game. We will go back to some of the individual performances and points in a minute, but the last 18 hours at time of recording have been just delicious. Sensational.
All the content. I've watched every replay. I've seen every meme. I've seen every pundit. I've seen Jamie Carragher's reactions a million times. I've watched everything. I've even watched my own reactions back, which is quite self-serving, but fuck it, I did it anyway.
Seen the merch?
Oh, yeah. I've been involved in every single... I haven't slept, really. Oh, last night I went to bed, I was thinking, what are we going to do today? What we're going to do? Are we going to celebrate? Just adrenaline. I got home and Claire was like, you're coming to bed? I was like, I can't. Like, and bear in mind, I got home like 9 o'clock. I was like, well, obviously not. I'm gonna stay and watch some memes and stuff. And then it was like midnight. He went, are you still watching your phone? I was like, absolutely. And I've still got 55 more videos to watch. I haven't even got to Goldbridge yet. So I was like, I have been like basking. Like I say, it's not like. And obviously, what I love it, I've seen the Man United fans, oh, enjoy your trophy or enjoy your bus parade because you beat us. Like, we didn't beat you, we beat you 7-0. And if you beat us 7-0, you'd be doing the exact same thing. So settle down, you gang of mank pricks, and we're doing this. And congratulations, you just won a cup and you're above us in the league. But you know what? The worst Liverpool team of all time, that would be getting called a 7 points behind just now. And we've just schooled just by seven at our ground. So you just gotta all settle down, get yourselves back in your little box, and we're going to enjoy this for a week.
Yeah, what's everyone's favourite bit of content been? That we've consumed in that time since?
Good question, that. I mean, the Goldbridge stuff is brilliant. It's probably Lisandro Martinez running the wrong way. Yeah. That's probably my favourite picture. I mean, I love all the Carragher stuff, but Steve's absolutely right. You've just got to enjoy these moments. This is what you're in it for, ultimately, isn't it? This is why we love this sport. This is why we love Liverpool Football Club. Trophies are boss, but games like this don't come around all that often. So, but yeah, for me, it probably is anything Lisandro Martinez related.
Him looking the wrong way is special.
Yeah.
Special.
Yeah.
He's fully running. As I tweeted, he's tracking a runner, but it's like a runner down the road somewhere. He's like nowhere near where he should be. Yeah. Absolutely nowhere.
I loved Errol, by the way, saying it was it when in the first goal, he said, you know, Rafa Varango sent for a French baguette, and he's just like sliding off the screen in slow motion. That was awesome. I've loved Trent putting the crown on Salah's head. That's incredible. I go back to what I say. I've enjoyed my reaction. I didn't realise Errol kissed me. Someone messaged me going, did Errol kiss you? I was like, he fucking didn't. And since I found the video, Errol did kiss me. Yeah. Which, it wasn't consensual, but I'm not complaining.
Have you seen Trent throwing the ball at Bruno as well? So the guy, I think Trent tackles it out for like a goal kick to them, and he's the one who collects the ball, and Bruno like wants to get it back quickly for a throw-in, and he's like launches it at him, like groin area. It's so good. You can see Bruno want to go, but he just like stops himself. And then he kind of manhandles the line. It was a weird little engagement.
Yeah,
wasn't it? Yeah, but Trent proper launched the ball back at him. It's boss.
He's a fucking weirdo, isn't he?
You watched anything good?
You go back to the Goldbridge thing. You've got to love the empty chair. That's class, that. That's typical Goldbridge, isn't it?
I think we saw the cracks in Mark Goldbridge's persona there a bit, to be honest. Of like, I think there's a bit there. Because look, I've always said he does pre-prepare some of his things.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think.
Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm not sure if he was as big a United fan as he claims. I'm not sure he reacts quite the
as
way.
Calmly?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
I did like the energy. I like the fact that he tweeted as well. Like, you know, the lad who scores against us, we should have signed him and said, we've got this lad from Burnley and it glazes out. I've loved all, you know, get the yellow and gold scarves back, lads. Get the scarves back. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you were tweeting that way. It's like, but I put that straight afterwards. Like, it's almost before it was finished of like, get the Harry Potter scarves out, lads, because it's time to start a protest. And I heard them singing about the Glazers, one Glazers song during the game. It's like,
they don't get it. They don't get it. If they'd won that game, we'd never not have heard a word about golden green scarves, would we?
Reverted type, don't they? It's like the playing team. They reverted type yesterday, them lot.
On the flip side, right, that Vergo's the shit. I'd be complaining if he played for us. he's fucking
we joked on, maybe it was the biased footy show podcast last week about how Ferguson come out and bodied them post-match in the League Cup final, which was hilarious because there's your all-time greatest manager and he's going, oh yeah, really good, they need a striker though, and it's like, you've just got a striker in January, mate.
Playing on number 10.
Yeah.
He can't move. He's a fucking statue.
No, they're not wrong, but that's where they're at. And there was just a delicious irony staying. They wanted Cody Gakpo. We decided to move in case they got Cody Gakpo, and he scores the opening goal and the goal that probably kills the game.
Everyone assumed he was going there. You know, we got wind of it, didn't we? We all had a little flutter and that. But the odds with him to go to Man United were evens at the time. So, it was definitely a case of, they thought they were getting him, we got him, and we reaped the rewards of it. He was absolutely superb, and the opening goal was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. I think it was Phil Blundell tweeted in response to a picture of like, oh, the butcher of Manchester's here, and it's like the Argentina flag and the knife, and it's a picture of that bell and at the back, and it's the only thing you butchered is your fringe. It was absolutely incredible. I enjoyed Stefan Paddock tweeting about how they were, you know, oh, wonder if the lads are okay after the coach greeting and all that, and you know, when you bodied them after the back of that.
I've seen people, Marcus Rashford had a tweet out a year ago saying who's up for seven or something. Yeah. That's been getting retweeted.
Go on then.
Yeah, little, if you want. Bruno Fernandes getting skinned by Stefan by Chetage and just walking off, like, as if to say, I give up. That's been great. There's loads more that I haven't seen yet, but I can't wait.
About a Gakpo Dinky Winky where we were just standing?
I need to find that. It's one of the greatest moments.
It's on Adam Rose Twitter. Go and chase Adam Rose Twitter.
On Gakpo though, I know we've kind of alluded to it there. Like, that was some performance from him. Like, I think he's been very good since he signed. Like, I've been really impressed. Big fan of it. I called him the second coming of Bobby Firmino on the build up yesterday. But man, that was proper class, like sheer class. He just oozed it. And to produce those two finishes just shows you he has absolutely everything. We've kind of praised his link-up and his ability to do that sort of stuff, but the finishes are unreal yesterday.
Yeah, I was just made up with absolutely everyone. It's what happens when you get it all right at the same time. And again, Real Madrid game felt like a precursor to that. You know, we got 20, 25 minutes, half an hour, however long you want to stretch it out for, of when the team and the fans and everyone gets together. But the difference being that because we hadn't blitzed them early, there was still a bit to be fought for. And I actually, the really encouraging thing, Steve, was I've heard people saying, in fact, I think it was what Dan was saying, like Elliot faded a little bit after half an hour and replaced. But Man United came back into the game, is what happened. They actually started to get on the ball. We kind of blew ourselves out a little bit. And the big issue we've had this season is when we've gone gung-ho at something and we've not killed the team off, we've been so vulnerable the other way. Whereas actually what happened is we put our exertions into making sure the door stayed shut. That was my big positive from the first half.
Well, they had two really notable opportunities. The first one being the Fernandez header. If he scores from there, you have to put your hand up and say, great finish. You've no right to get it on target from there. So I don't see that as the big problem that the press and the media perceived it on the day, and certainly Sky Sports did. And then obviously the Rashford one, where he has a go first time and it comes off the bottom of his stub plate and runs through to Alisson. But yeah, you're right. We gave it a go first 20 minutes or so, and then they sort of weathered that storm. The irony is, just before we scored, Gary Neville's on the telly going, this is a classic away performance. You come in, you weather the storm, you nullify the fans, and then you get back in. Oh, it's 1-0 to Liverpool. It was kind of a Tim Sherwood moment. so you're right. Really, really good performance, and they dug in, and the fight was there again to keep United out, because they definitely got a stranglehold of the game, particularly in midfield in the last 15, 20 minutes of the first half.
It's mad, because it was. I don't think either side was on. I think we started the half better, and they were coming into it, but like no one had really showed any moments of pure quality. There was, I actually thought United defended quite well in terms of, you know, block Martinez. We gave him some stick before because, you know, we got spun like a top. But before that, he'd done a couple of blocks. I think there was a shot that might have been going in that he got in the way and headed. He just stops Darwin Nunes on that cross.
That was the big
one. Over the bar, yeah. Good one as well. So they defended well. We defended pretty well. And then, like I say, there's two moments of, you know, Rashford has a chance and he bottles it. I think he bottles it because he's in form. He should be taking a touch there and burying that.
He
just kind of bottles it a little bit, and then we get our moment of quality and it goes the other way because Robertson's brilliant and Gakpo is just as good, even better. And that's what you need sometimes, like I say, in these type of games, a real piece of quality against a team who's defending quite well, or a mistake, that's what's going to kill you. Liverpool again nearly made the mistake with the Harvey Elliott suicide pass. Didn't work out for Man United, and then we get a real massive bit of quality, and it's two moments of genius really. Robertson's run just into the middle of the pitch. He loves doing that sometimes. He almost just drives at like diagonal line, straight towards like the right corner flag, because he just knows he can. The lads can run off him. The vision and the pass is amazing, and Gakpo was like, yeah, he does. He sends Varane for Lekip, and then just cuts inside and just bends it. It's Sadio Mane-esque.
Paul Le Parisien.
He absolutely sends him for it, yeah. And then just the finish is magnificent. And it's a moment of real quality, and that's what, you know, Man United, to be fair, like I say, they're a good defence. I say this now after beating them 7-0, but generally speaking, the defence is a strong point of theirs, and it took a real magic moment to get through them. And past the goalie, again, he was having a pretty good season. He saved quite a lot there. You know, he could have been 7 lads in goal there. I actually think Martinez might have been in goal at one point. He was on the line, wasn't he? So it was a true moment. And that's why it's so good from Gakpo. It wasn't like, with all due respect, the goal against Everton's a tap-in where you're thinking, well, pretty much anyone could have done that, couldn't he? This is a real magic moment now. It's the moment that when we start thinking of, you know, if Cody Gakpo goes on to have a Liverpool key that we hope he has, we all reminisce of Sadio doing it against Arsenal on his debut. This will be the one that comes back. I remember Gakpo's goal against Man United. All the comps will be starting with that goal, won't they, and all that. So, real moment of genius, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Gary Neville said United were the better team.
Did he say like that?
No.
Okay.
United.
The best team. In the first it's half. A fluke. Fluke.
Yeah. They weren't the better team in the first half. I can entertain that it was a balanced first half, but I won't hear they were the better team in the first half, Dan. The problem is, of course, it leads him to dig it into a little bit of a hole, and then he looks a little bit of a tit for it. But I was just generally pleased with how Liverpool conducted themselves. And a couple of little moments aside, it felt in Liverpool's sphere of influence. There's a couple of sticky moments where I don't think our movement was great, and we maybe passed ourselves into a couple of problems. But the way we just composed ourselves, I never genuinely felt like the game was on a massive knife edge and like United were at any point really going to carve us apart.
No, it didn't feel like that, and I can't really entertain that they were the better team either. I tweeted that we deservedly led at the break, because I felt like that was just about how the balance of play have gone. If somebody was to sit here and say, no, it was even, it should have been 0-0, I'd probably be okay with that conversation. Yeah. But it did feel like a game that was going to take a moment of, like, the game had been like a sort of 7 out of 10 quality throughout. Both teams had made mistakes, both teams were sort of butchered the final pass a little bit and what have you, and Harvey Elliott was probably sort of the most worrying moment from our point of view, that pass he tries to play across the pitch. You just shouldn't do that. You can't do that. He should know better than that. He's more mature than that now as a football player. So that was the one poor element from our perspective. Outside of that, we defended pretty well. We competed for everything. And we were on top for the most part, I would say. It was always going to take that one bit of extra quality, and it was us that produced it. It was Andy Robertson and Cody Gakpo, obviously. But what I like most about that goal, I mean, the finish is high class. I've always sort of waxed Liverpool about that. Is the fact that it was Gakpo who'd gone out to the left, because Darwin Núñez was having a bit of a poor half. It clearly wasn't working for him from the left wing at all. And it was like him and Gakpo had kind of worked out between themselves. Like, you have a go in here and I'll have a go out there and we'll see what happens, because we were getting loads of space down our left, and that sort of link up, that overlap was on all the time. Him and Núñez and Robertson just couldn't get it right. So Gakpo goes, let me have a go then. And all of a sudden it just clicks like that. So that was most pleasing for me.
Yeah, that was one of those things we've seen this time and time again. We saw this last week as well, in first halves of football under Klopp, typically it's just about us keeping ourselves in the game, dominating possession as best we can. If we can score, we score, but if not, we keep it tight, and then at half time we make a couple of tactical tweaks and then we go on from then. And Darwin Núñez typified that in a huge way for me, and I think obviously we kind of solved it in game, but he was poor in the first half. He really was. His attitude was wrong. I don't know what was going on. And me and the guy behind us, and it's interesting because in the vlog, when he scores, the guy behind me, you can hear him going, "See, I told you we should have took him off at half time." But he and I wondered why that was, and I speculated at the time that maybe he'd just been overloaded with a little bit too much information, because they have a really good chance. It's the fact it's the Bruno Fernandes header at the back post. Comes because he switches off and he's back in the left back position, but he just jogs it in to kind of, and I wondered a little bit, like, he's great when you're asking him to roam free and be wild and all that kind of stuff, but maybe there was a bit too much on his shoulders and the game state didn't allow him to do the things that he does, which is have loads of space to run into. So it was a really tricky first half for Darwin Núñez, but pleasingly in the second he just got to be him again.
Well, if you watch him during the game, because he's an emotional guy, he's all over the place, isn't he? It could be that the occasion got to him. This has been hyped. He wanted to prove a point. He probably tried a bit too hard. Everyone's right. In the first half, you watched him thinking, there were people saying, is he injured? Is there something wrong with him? You know, what's wrong with Darwin? And then, as you referenced early on, Paul, that United can't solve problems on the pitch. Well, we did. And that could have been a Henderson, a bit of information, or a Van Dijk swap over. And then in the second half, he comes out and he's like a completely different player. So I think that's the roller coaster ride we're going to have with Darwin Núñez. In one minute you think, what the hell's he doing? And the next minute you think, ah, that's magic. That's world class.
I want a show of hands, and I want everyone watching live to give me a show of hands in the comments as well. Who was annoyed or worried when Bacetic didn't start the game?
Oh, you mean 100%.
Right, hand down a second. Next question. Who was annoyed and a bit worried when we chose to start Harvey Elliott in this game?
Worried. Only because Bacetic wasn't there.
Not annoyed, worried, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really bold move, and it signaled, like you said before, it signaled we were going to go for this, and I quite like that. It's brave, and that's a word Klopp uses often, brave. I thought Harvey Elliott was okay to play. I thought Bacetic would have replaced Henderson or Fabinho. That wasn't the guy I saw him missing out to. So I like Harvey Elliott, and as the game wore on, that faith in him we all show from time to time proved to be justified. But yeah, I didn't think it would be him that would miss out. I thought it would be one of the other two.
I had no problem with Harvey playing, but I was shocked that Bacetic wasn't. Even if he didn't want to play, if he wanted to play Harvey, I thought, well, you didn't have to play Henderson and Fabinho. Ooh. I just thought, like, I think we all said we on the Thursday night show again, you know, name your team. Bacetic is one of the first names on the team, rather than, again, just goes to show, you know, Jürgen knows, he's got this shit covered, like, he knows what he's doing. You know, he very rarely, I said this on the final word again, but apologies for repeating myself a bit, but he did say, he very rarely does this, but in this pre-match interview with Sky, he said, we set a record for counter-pressing movements against Wolves, and Harvey was a big part of that. So he's explained it. He doesn't usually just goes, I've got loads of players and I'm picking the best team for the game, etc., etc., etc. He actually gave us the reason why he chose it. He thought, we're going to try and win the ball back high up the pitch, and I think Harvey gives us the best chance. Not only because he's a good presser, which he is, I don't think he's a great tackler, but he's always the second one around the ball. So it's like if Fabinho was holding somebody up, Elliott's the one who comes and nicks it off them, or vice versa. Trent was doing it on Fernandes a little bit. He's really good at that. And secondly, he's just more. He's happy to be more advanced up the pitch. He's more comfortable up there. So you can go and press Luke Shaw on his toes, or you can have Casemiro going backwards rather than forwards. So
It was a really clever decision, really brave one, like Steve says. And listen, he was fully justified. But yeah, listen, at 3:15 when we were doing the team news, or half an hour when it came out, I was, you know, it was a major surprise that Stefan Bajcetic wasn't on the team.
We talked about this. We did Thursday night pints, and I proposed it, and I didn't think for a while that Jordan Henderson would be starting in the left of the eights. To be perfectly honest, I thought it would be Harvey for Jordan. I thought Bajcetic would keep his place. Yeah. But one of the things I was keen to point out at the time is that Harvey Elliott's been in really good form for us. Mm. And it was probably a little bit undercut by the Crystal Palace thing, because ultimately everyone else let him down more than others. He wanted to try and get us back up and running in that game.
He did well in that game for the first 10-15
minutes. But like, he had a good performance off the bench at Newcastle, good performance off the bench at Crystal Palace. He was good against Wolves all game that he was on the pitch. And I thought it's one of those things, isn't it? When you've got everything back up and running again, not necessarily flying, but up and running again, you've got a little bit of momentum. Klopp builds that by going to people, you, mm-hmm. I believe in you. Yeah. You're going to go and do this for me. So it was a huge shout for Harvey Elliott. And the thing that, I mentioned this in my post-match video, but I was also surrounded by 12,000 people on the cop, so I wasn't sure how clear it was, is he's a Liverpool fan. Liverpool fan through and through. And we forget that sometimes, that this game means just as much to him as it does to Trent Alexander-Arnold, and playing for Liverpool means just as much to him as it does Trent Alexander-Arnold. And people be watching this at home, you know this. Doesn't matter where you're born, if Liverpool's in your blood, mm-hmm. in that way, gets into your blood, yeah. whether he's born in there or not, it seeps in, and you got this, you know, undying love for it. And Harvey Elliott had that, and what I was saying, what Elliott brings and Bajcetic brings, is energy, yeah. and commitment. Mm-hmm. And yes, Elliott's not 5'10" or 6' or whatever, but he's tenacious. And as long as Henderson and Fabinho or the other two midfielders are bang up for it, then that'll work for us, because Elliott's not going to not get back in. He did that all game, got up and down all game long. If you get a chance, go on SofaScore, people, and look at his heat map. He's got the right hand side of Liverpool's team covered. He's all over. But he's mainly between the two boxes. That's where he's hottest. He functionally performs the role. Now, you might bring Jude Bellingham in, and he is 6'2", and he does have all the defensive attributes and all the attacking attributes, yeah. and that's when you go up a level. But Harvey Elliott is a little gem, and you'll never find him wanting. And we found people wanting too many times, and that was the thing that really I enjoyed about it. It was brave, it paid off, and Harvey Elliott was given the trust, and he ran with it. And we can remind ourselves again that we've got a fucking wonder kid at the football club there, so let's enjoy him for what he is.
Mate, I was on the watch along, and when the team news came out, the disrespect towards that guy, and I was honest, I said, listen, I wouldn't have picked him, but you'd be a knobhead here. Like some people, that he's crap, he's never done anything, he's this, he's that. And I was like, I'm watching the same player. If anything, it's the other two that you probably want to be worried about more this season, especially than him. He hasn't been the problem. It's the other two lads you have, and you made it the point before. Harvey Elliott, though, can't have that type of performance that he played without Henderson and Fabinho in the team with him, having a good game. Because if they have a bad game, he just looks lost. Because he's never going to be on the ball, and he's never really going to win tackles. He'll be there or thereabouts, but he's not going to be able to do it. Because Fabinho and Henderson are, you know, again, they're in the middle of pretty average seasons, or if not worse, on their own behalf. But like, both of them were excellent again. I feel like we're nearly there with Fabinho. It's been coming for a while, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. He was shocking for a while, and he kept coming off the bench and looking like he hadn't played footy before, and now he's getting better and better. And I thought yesterday he was back to somewhere near his best. You know, he's at his best when he wins the ball up on the edge of their box, or they just can't get out, and you can sustain attack after attack after attack. Henderson, you said he was playing left wing, mate. He was everywhere. He was absolutely unbelievable, Jordan Henderson. And when if them two do the jobs, like I say, then that allows Harvey to go and be a bit more creative, or go and get into, you know, he can go and jump behind Casemiro because he's not worried. He's made to box him off a little bit. So I thought that, again, the midfield, which was the second, I was saying before, I was worried about Rashford, and I was worried about midfield battle. Well, Liverpool comfortably won the midfield battle. Even that part where Man United, I thought, were on top. I don't think that was the midfield that was doing well, really. I didn't see it like that at all. I thought the defenders were doing well. And it was actually the ball out wide to the foot, and to Luke Shaw in particular, where they were having a bit of joy going down that left. So I thought, yeah, Henderson, Fabinho and Elliott, all three of them were brilliant.
It is interesting, just your analogy and your summary of Elliott was spot on. With Bajcetic, I think there's a really man-management element to this, in that your rise has been meteoric and we think you're great, but hold your horses, rein you in a little bit. You're going to miss this one out because that's what happens in professional football. Don't get ahead of yourself. Don't believe the hype. Little reality check will do him the world of good going forward.
And in reality, we've got the subs now to manage a 95-minute yeah. football game. Mm-hmm. And so having him in reserve meant that if we needed to add a bit more steel, like if Fabinho's legs fell off, then you can actually just bring him into the six in the back end of the game and you don't have to lose anything.
He did do that
doing.
Though. He, yeah, because I had to tell him he was playing number six. Because he was running down the right wing, skipping past people, and he was good when he came on as well.
Yeah, exactly. And so that was that's what happens now. All of a sudden, we've got players back available to us. There's a horses for courses style thing that we can do. We can make small tweaks. Yeah. You want you in prime Klopp era Liverpool, whatever, you know, to use all the modern words. Our midfield was people used to damn it with faint praise about being very energetic and functional, all that. It was a Swiss Army knife, but it wasn't like one of those ones that's got like a magnifying glass and a laser pointer in it. But it had like a corkscrew and a big fuck off knife and something to pick your nails with. You know what I mean? It had enough to get you out of the most of the standard scrapes. To be more now, you've got to have more strings to your bow, and you've got to and because of five subs. You can have the midfield functionally performs the same. So the Swiss Army knife all folds down. They all look exactly the same. They've all got that little logo on. It's all the same colour. It's recognisable as a Swiss Army knife. But what we've got now is just there'll be games where you do need Elliot to play in there because mm-hmm. you want a little bit more creativity. You want a bit more progression in how you're carrying the ball and how you're passing the ball. And there'll be times when you do want to be a bit more stodgy or a bit more physical or a bit more brutal, in which case, yeah, change them around and do some other things with it. But that was the best. That's the first time we've almost been able to proactively choose our midfield in ages. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, and the attack and the front three. And lo and behold, we
bought the results.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I'm made up for Javier. It's a really am because you do. There's always got to be a scapegoat. So there's going to be someone. I saw it again. Put it in the vlog, and instantly the YouTube comments is a guy going, "Never want to see Gomez or Jones play again." It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? We just beat Man United, and we beat Man United because of these players. I know it doesn't feel that way. It's more because Cody Gakpo scored two and Salah scored two. No, Nunes, blah blah blah. We've got a squad. You can't just have 13 or 14 lads. You need to have all these players. And look, Curtis Jones has got a lot of catching up to do now, you know, in terms of his career in general. But and it's totally on the side, he's not even barely worth a discussion point. But I was thinking this, funnily enough, on the drive in this morning, we just need him to be Darren Fletcher. He just needs to be John O'Shea. He just needs to be a lad who's good enough to be at Liverpool Football Club. Let's not worry about all that. And Gomez the same. Gomez just needs to be our 4-3 centre half. Curtis Jones needs to be our 8-3 centre midfielder. And if we can get to that world, we're absolutely fucking laughing. Mo Salah, Dan Club, Liverpool's all-time record Premier League goal scorer.
Yeah,
he's in the pantheon now, and he has been for a while. To be fair, of Liverpool gods, Liverpool greats. It's just great to see him when he's like that. And I think the last few weeks, again, it's another example. When everyone else is pulling their weight, Mo Salah gets the platform to shine.
There were definitely elements of that, wasn't it? But there was also elements for me of it didn't really seem to matter what was going on around him yesterday. He was going to produce a performance right out of the top drawer, no matter what. He was sharp. Some weeks, you look at Mo Salah, and he probably ends up scoring in most of his games, scoring one, two, possibly even three sometimes. But he hasn't really played that well, occasionally. Mm-hmm. He wasn't great, but yeah, he gets his goal, so you move on. Yesterday was not none of that. Yesterday was a performance that was absolutely 10 out of 10 from pretty much touch one from him. Everything he did just seemed to turn to something magical for us. He was bringing players out of position for them. He was making things happen around him. He was lending it to Trent at the right time. He was giving it to Gakpo at the right time, which obviously was illustrated in the assists later on. And I kind of alluded to it upstairs, I think, earlier on with you, Steve. It was like, obviously, Salah sends Lisandro Martinez, makes an absolute mess of him, twists his blood, essentially. But how many times in sort of previous weeks would we have seen Salah, maybe not at full confidence, not at full tilt, go himself in that situation? Mm-hmm. And it might well have ended up him having a shot. We might not have scored from it. Instead, because he's playing at the very peak of his powers bingo, by the way, in the podcast, he manages to pick the perfect pass and the weight is perfect. It was just, like I say, a performance of a world-class, very, very elite footballer. And we've seen lots of them from Salah, but very often we see, oh yeah, get his goal, move on. But yesterday he had absolutely everything. Even his strength, like he was winning tackles, he was holding people off. It was unbelievable.
I think it was the best game he'd ever played. I think that was Salah's best game for Liverpool. I thought he was unplayable. They couldn't get near him. They took it in turns of kicking him. The old Tony Pulis tactic of everyone gets one nibble at him so you don't get a yellow. Shaw tries it, Casemiro tries it, Martin, they're all booting him, he gets elbowed in the face,
yeah.
Just gets up and laughs at his heart. He then goes back and chases Luke Shaw down and is laughing at his face at him. They couldn't get near him, he was unplayable. And that second half, it was just like you know, on a video game when you fill your power bar up and you've got like max strength and you can do whatever the fuck you want to do. He couldn't get near him. It was ridiculous. The pace, the power, the strength, the ability. The finishes are just two instinctive finishes. The first one, it's just off the bar, always makes it look better. He is just like, when he's like that, you can't stop him. We haven't seen it enough again for a million reasons. Some of it's on the team and some of it's on him this season. But I think personally, given everything that went on, I think that was his best performance. He scored, isn't he? I've seen him score hat-tricks, I've seen him score four goals in a game. But yesterday, Dan's right, it was the all-round game. From minute one, I can't think of a Mo Salah mistake, an error, a loose, but it was just out of this world good.
It's this season, Stan, I have to caveat all this with, he's been scoring goals all season for us. You know, he's now 22 goals for us this season in all comps, which is just ridiculous. But at times it felt a little bit like Egypt Salah that we've had, and I feel like that's the Salah we got back from the AFCON, and he's had little bits and pieces where he's been back to himself. He's got the instinctive finish. He's just a great goal scorer, but his all round play, it's that thing of like, I've got to be the guy who does it.
Yeah.
Instead of just being the guy who just sticks stuff away, I think what Dan said, he feels like he's got to be the guy who dribbles past three and sticks it in because no one else can do it for him. And he looks very isolated. He cuts a lonely figure when he's playing like that. Whereas that's the thing, Cody Gakpo's making runs in front of him now and Darwin Nunes, and he's getting that understanding. And he knows that I'm going to give a goal because I'm going to get a goal back in return. And that was what made our original front three function, was that everyone knew that we're going to get a turn. And Salah gets to play now this like elder statesman of Liverpool's attack. But in a way that, like Messi kind of did, you know, in the last sort of 5 years, probably of his Barcelona career, everyone else gets to do a lot more running and do a lot more of the energetic stuff, and Mo Salah just gets to take all the plaudits and score the goals. And that was, again, that was the best example against Manchester United of, I can see a world now where Mo Salah's contract makes sense.
Yeah.
And it hasn't done for a few weeks, because as much as he scored the goals, he hasn't scored at a better goal return. He hasn't, like, got 33% more goals because he's got a massive boost to his pay or whatever. But I can see a world where you can have two or three seasons at least now of these guys being the main guys.
But it was like when we all pushed for him, the world pushed for him to get player, you know, Ballon d'Or, and he missed out. He came back from the AFCON. He never really found that form again. He's a guy who needs to have that main character syndrome. And all the best players in the world, your Messi, your Ronaldo's, you can go on to the annals of history. They all want to be the number one guy, the main character, and it suits him to be that. And you're exactly right. That's probably the closest to pre-AFCON Ballon d'Or pushing Mo Salah we've seen. And there's been times when all of us have sat and spoke about his contract and thought he's getting paid an awful lot of money, and it's not the same Mo Salah. It's probably been 14, 15 months since we've seen a performance of that magnitude, and that's one of the best ones he's ever given us. So a real welcome return to that Mo Salah, and long may it continue for me.
You can tell by the reaction to the second goal as well. Obviously, he knows the record. Like, you don't whip your top off for no reason for scoring that one. I mean, why wouldn't you when you look like that?
Yeah.
But Trent's giving him the crown. Harvey Elliott's bowing down to him. Like, everybody knows, like, they are in awe of this fella. Everyone talks about so well about him, because we don't see Mo Salah the leader. We don't see none of that, do we? But you can tell they do. The way people speak about him and the way they act towards him, he's just everything about him. He's high class. He's into, yeah, I'm going to go home and have a cup of tea and go to bed, because that's me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's a high class individual. The standards he sets himself are ridiculous. The standards we now place upon him are ridiculous. And he continues to meet them, like I say, in a season where before, obviously, 20 odd goals, and we were like, and we were all saying it. Maybe Mo Salah's like, no, don't worry about Mo. Mo Salah's not the problem. You know, if Liverpool are functioning fine, you won't get there's no issues about Mohamed Salah. We've seen the Salah purple patches, and last time it was around the 5-0 at Old Trafford. At that point, when he was, you know, the best player in the world, we had T-shirts with it on. We were singing the song, you know, Salah's the best in the world, and all that kind of stuff. He has these patches, and sometimes it just starts with one of these games, and he can go on a little run.
where he'll have like 10 games or something where he's just untouchable. Fingers crossed, that's how we do now.
Well, he's got 33 goals and assists in all comps this season. The issue has been it's the Premier League. That's where we've struggled, and I mentioned this a few weeks ago, but you know, we haven't had someone who's been just banging the goals. You either have one person who does it all, or you spread it out a bit, and we've spread it out but not had the volume at the same time, whereas now it just feels like it's starting to click again. Mm-hmm. This is just on Premier League goals. Salah's now got 11. Darwin Nunes has now got 8. Alongside Roberto Firmino with 8. Cody Gakpo quietly has got 4 Premier League goals for us in 8 appearances in the Premier League, which is phenomenal given that it was only Thursday. I was saying, I'm not sure he's got the goals in him. And, you know, we've got Luis Diaz still to come back into that potentially. The one thing I thought helped the whole endeavour, and it was typified by the response when he comes on the pitch, the Roberto Firmino news, I think helps us. I think it set a great tone of like, let's give Bobby one last big hurrah, let's do it, let's almost do it for Bobby. He's out there enjoying it. He's going to go and leave absolutely nothing in the tank between now and the end of the season. But you could see it in how he scored the goal and Trent pushing him towards the cop to go and get his moment, and then Trent's there putting the crown on Salah, and like the old school lads are all like, you're putting their arms around each other. They're the core, they're the old school, and then they're embracing these new lads as well. And for me, you know, I just feel like he gets down to like, he needs to come on, get his name, so beam and smile when it's happening. We get 3 more months of a prime Roberto Firmino, and all the while, I think it just does. I don't think anyone's sad, because the fact that he's going on his own terms and he's made it as clear as possible, this could be a real negative. It could be a real, you know, really, really sad thing, but instead it feels like a potentially galvanising moment for everyone.
Well, I mean, it was the perfect way to start your long farewell, wasn't it? Let's be honest about it. I mean, to come on and score, and obviously he looked quite emotional afterwards as well, and it was kind of, it typifies the player he's been for, was the fact he didn't really want to go and take the adulation. Like, he loves a celebration, let's not shy away from that, but the fact that Trent does have to push him back to the cop, it's almost like, oh no, we'll just get on with the game, like, the other lads have scored. It's like, no, Bobby, you go. And I think, if this is to be, well, it is to be a sort of his departing message now, if you like. It is a real opportunity for us to kind of go out on a high with him, because it would be a real shame for his Liverpool career if he were to go out on a bit of a damp squib and kind of the season peters out. So if we go on a run from here on out and do get top four, which is the aim now, that has to be seen as an achievement for us. It's not what we all wanted, but we are where we are. But it's almost like, do it for Bobby's sake, like you say. And the fact he gets to come on and enjoy that moment and get his goal is just, like I say, it's the perfect start to what could be a pretty emotional farewell, I think, when it does come to it, because he is a modern day Liverpool legend. There's no two ways about that, and we all absolutely adore him for everything he's given to the club. Like I say, I think that was hopefully just a small part of what's going to be a pretty perfect send off.
Yeah, it was great, and it ends up being like a magical moment. I couldn't have handpicked a better person to score the 7th goal in that game, Steve. Mm-hmm. No. He comes on the pitch, you get him, it's wonderfully Bobby. You know, he megs the goalkeeper for the 7th goal. Like, it's just, yeah, it is. And he will be sorely missed. But we've got loads more games where he's got a chance to have a real lasting impact on this season.
Yeah, and maybe in a similar way as he was on Sunday, in regards that Cody Gakpo is clearly the future and we need to build that now. We need to use the remainder of the season to make sure everyone flies out the traps at the start of next season and we give the best account of ourselves early doors. He may well come on in cameos for the rest of the season. He isn't the future of what Klopp's trying to build. We get that. We know that. We're very grateful for that. We want to see him. We want to see him before he goes. You're quite right. Yesterday, you know, the opposition, the score, the 7th goal. If you were a script writer and you were writing the most fanciful of football matches, that would be your storyline, wouldn't it? So yeah, you're right. It is sad, but it's not sad, if you can say that. You know, it's weird that he's going, but we look like we're going to be okay with the people that are picking up the mantle from him.
Exactly.
I said the only Liverpool's later person who didn't want Bobby to score that goal was probably Mo Salah. I think he wanted his hat trick, didn't he? when Jota goes down, he's Salah's screen, he wants that penalty, doesn't he? But yeah, it was just a reminder, like, Liverpool at this time last season won games because we had strikers on the bench who we brought on who could change games. Not less than 7-0 is a freak, don't get me wrong, it's brilliant. But like,
there are games where, oh, this is a bit tight, and then you can just go to your bench and go, right, Diaz, Bobby, you're going on, or Jota, you're going on, you know what I mean? And we're there now. We're one away for having six again. At the moment, we've got five of them, and that's really helpful, and the six one's not too far away, touch wood. That's gonna be a major positive going forward. You know, if you can, especially with five subs, if you're looking at your bench, and say you start Jota, Gakpo, Nunes, like you did yesterday, you can turn around and you've got, so if you start Gakpo, Nunes, Salah, and then you can turn around and go, right, I've got Bobby, I've got Diaz, and I've got Jota. Mm. Like, first of all, you're never out of game. You're never thinking, oh, where's the goal going to come from? Because you're looking at three lads there who can all do something on your bench, whatever way around you do it. So again, provided he can all stay fit and fine, and Roberto Firmino's going to be sixth choice when Luis Diaz comes back, that's a great place to be in for Liverpool. If he's your sixth best option up front, you're doing all right, aren't you? Freaking hell. Yeah. And I agree, you know, we are now on the Bobby Swansong tour, you know, the farewell tour. Just go and play the hits like for a few more months, Bobby. Get, you know, do some more.
No-look finishes.
Yeah, a couple of no-look finishes, a couple of eye patches, a couple of silky samba skills. Give the ball around the halfway line and go and win it back. Make us shit ourselves. Or go and play the hits a few more months. And I'm with you, like, we'll see loads of 20-minute cameos. And what's interesting about his celebration, he's not usually an emotional guy at all, but like how he celebrates, he's usually like a bit of laugh. The eye patch, or he pulls his shorts down, or he does one of the dances, or he's doing the high kicks. This one was like pure emotion. Like a real outpouring from him. We don't really see that from him. Well, it's been an emotional week for him, yes. Because he's going to your manager and saying, mate, I've loved it here, but I'm off now. That's never easy. That's been on his mind for a while. That isn't a decision that just happens. He's been weighing this up for a while.
He's been waiting for the perfect moment to have that conversation. He's probably known that for a little while.
And there isn't one.
It's interesting that a couple of players coming back from injuries is kind of the moment he's chosen to go and do it. He's won a couple of games and stuff. He has picked a very interesting moment there to go and
absolutely
have a conversation.
And against fans, that's what was so wonderful about the whole thing, is we found it out in the week. Everyone was a bit like, oh, a bit down on Bobby Firmino. God, we love him. We all got to share loads of videos and look back at his best moments. And go, oh, God, yeah, I love Bobby Firmino so much. But then for Gakpo to come in and play like that, start that game, which sends the message that says, this is what the future is. He scores the goals. He basically wins us the football match. And then Bobby comes on the old master. It's feeling a great feeling of like, they've got this. This is okay. This isn't sunrise, sunset. It's as natural as the coming in and out of the tide. You know, football teams evolve and change, but Liverpool remains eternal. That kind of stuff, as opposed to, let's use Gini Wijnaldum leaving as an example, which felt a bit like, well, I mean, technically Thiago is a replacement, as much as people forget that. But you know, when you don't. It's nice to have the next ready and already in, and all of a sudden, the Gakpo signing in January now looks like an absolutely incredibly astute piece of business, because we're not replacing Bobby in the summer and then trying to go, right, here's some videos of what Roberto Firmino did. Can you try and do that, please? No, you get to watch him, you get to train with him, you get to rub off on him, or vice versa. It felt natural, this, for the first time in ages, like a natural passing of the torch, as opposed to someone goes and you look around and go, fuck, who's doing this job now that he's gone? You? Can you do the job? No? Okay, well, yeah. So, yeah. Very, 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 very encouraging, certainly. There's tons of players we could talk about, to be honest. We could do the whole fucking team, to be honest.
Steve's point's interesting about, the five is a six, there will be a six. Yeah. If you look across world football and look at squads, I'll challenge anyone to come back to me with a squad that's got six better forwards in its squad system.
If we can keep Jota fit, and that's a big ask, because he's the next mission is to get him a goal and get him back in the goals and see if he's still that, see if he can still be that main goal threat, because he's a 20 goal a season forward. Because of his lack of pace, I'm a little worried for him in the long term, because all of a sudden you've got Gakpo, you've got Nunes, and you've got Diaz and Salah there. Jota starts to look a little uncomfortable, but if he finds his form, honestly, you let Firmino go for me, and you've got five, and then you're hoping that between Elliot, Carvalho, and let's say Kay Gordon, Ben Doak, one of them is good enough to be your sixth, and then you evolve and you move on to the next.
Yeah, I agree on Jota, by the way, just to say as well. I think his prize asset for us is just his instinctive goal scoring. You mentioned sort of the ability to change games from the bench. Diogo Jota is that for me, because he comes on pretty much into any game situation, no matter how poorly you're playing, and gets a goal. That's him at his best. He hasn't done that at all this season, quite frankly, in the Premier League. He's not as good as Diaz on the left wing, because he's not as quick, as incisive as Diaz. And he's not as good as Gakpo playing the false nine, because Gakpo's a little bit more physical, stronger, his touches passage a little bit better. So Jota, for me, has to find his goal-scoring boots. Otherwise, you do start to question his role in the squad moving forward. And I love him, by the way, but he kind of has to fix that. Plays, not now, but he does have to fix
for
it.
For me, it just Jota plays in the games against the bottom 10 at home. You don't need a number 9 dropping into the midfield and win. Jota is just your finisher.
Well, he's just another. He's just a different and type of player. Brother,
he's fucking brilliant.
He is brilliant.
Yeah, he's class. He's another one. He lost. And that's the thing with Diaz. We keep saying, oh, he's going to be back soon. But like he's going to be back, but like he's going to be back, back. You know what I mean? At the minute, we've got 4.5 because Jota's not quite there.
No.
So like we're not looking ahead of ourselves, but I've got no question about any of the ability wise. There's no question about those.
It's back to the point though, of having lots of different ways to be. Yeah, we used to always say it was an old like wrestling ism, you know, talking about Ric Flair and stuff. It'd be like, if the left one don't get you, then the right one will. But ours is the left one don't get you, then and the right one don't get you, then the middle one will get you. Mm. Or then the right one will then get you, then the left one will get you, then why are you fucked? And then we had a Jota, and that was like a fourth guy who can do that. But all of a sudden, we've got 5 senior footballers. And then space for a wonder kid or two to come in and be a sprinkle a bit of magic. We're in very healthy situation.
It's interesting because you look at the dynamics of how the team might line up. What we might be seeing here is it's between Nunes and Jota to play through the middle of the furthest point forward. You look at the people that we're looking at signing, it could lead to a 4-2-3-1 for next season when we go mega attacking with all these guys and go, we're just going to blow you out the water, which we'd all love to see, by the way. And then it could just be, looking, when everyone's available, it's a shootout between those two.
Yeah, well, there will be games where you want to have that 4 up front because we're not going to have players. We're not going to play Man United every week. I'm sorry, guys. As much as we'd love to play Man United every week, it's not going to happen. So we are going to have to play teams who are good and are, you know, strong defensively. I'm well aware that I'm saying this from us being below them in the league, but you know what? I don't think that's going to last very long.
Enjoy this.
I genuinely don't think that's going to be a long thing.
The Glazer protest, they need to get Mo Salah protest because he fucking owns them as well, doesn't he? 12 goals against them now, that's incredible. 12 goals in 12 games, I think it is now. Mo Salah against Man United, just absolute. You talk about, you know, the big players in the big games, there's no bigger game for us that one is the any time and time again delivers hat tricks, twos.
There was a time when he got questioned in big games as well, by the way. I remember
he hadn't scored against United for a while, and then he just 12 in 12,
I think he scored.
With some assists thrown in for the good measure.
That
as
came
well,
off like the back of the Champions League final when he got injured, and everyone was like, you really needed to rely on him, and he wasn't there for you.
That was his fault entirely.
Judo wrestled to the floor.
He wasn't WWE wrestled to the floor with a straight arm, was he?
Right, sound. We're going to move things on. We're going to talk about Bournemouth Liverpool. I don't want to, so we'll probably talk a bit more about Man United in the back end, but we are going to do Agony Rant after the break. We've got a very short advert break for you guys with some wonderful things that we think you should be drawing your attention towards. We'll see us in a sec.
Hey, what's happening? We've got a boss prize for all of our Club Legend subscribers this month. It's been 30 years of Liverpool partnering with Carlsberg. They released the special edition Liverpool Carlsberg cans, and we have got sets of them to give away. 8, in fact. To be with a chance of winning them, all you've got to do is either upgrade your existing subscription from Club Captain to Club Legend, or head to redmenplus.com and join directly as a Club Legend there. Your name will be entered in, and yes, you could have these wonderful, wonderful beer cans in your personal Liverpool collection. Look great on a shelf or a mantelpiece or probably in your recycling bin. Get involved, redmenplus.com. Make sure that you are 18 plus. Only 18 plus people can win this, and obviously be responsible with your drinking as well. But yeah, look at them. Aren't they magnificent? And they could be yours.
My Liverpool debut, a new series, exploring where it all began for a number of Anfield favourites.
We had that belief and nothing was going to get in our way, nothing was going to stop us. I was just fortunate to get my chance.
I'm about to wear the red strip for the first time and play with all the wonderful talent that I was in awe of.
And the travelling Liverpool fans started singing my name. You can imagine how special that felt.
Football saved my life.
It was amazing to be part of that lineup with that calibre of players.
I knew I deserved to be there. I knew I deserved that chance. I knew I was ready.
I'm Jamie Carragher.
I'm Phil Thompson.
I'm Martin Kelly.
I'm Jim Beglin.
I'm Neil Mellor.
My name is Bruce David Grobbelaar.
And this is my Liverpool debut.
Mm.
Hey, yes, welcome back. We are trying to solve some tech issues. They're going to show you a wonderful thing that we've just released. But while I frantically try to host the show and solve that at the same time, let's do Agony Rant. I imagine slightly less things to get off our chest, but there are. I've certainly got one or two things that I'm burning my head out at the moment that I'd like to do. Dan, have you got anything?
I don't think so, mate. No, the only one I have got a slight grievance. If that leaked kit last week is accurate, then I will blow my own brains out. But outside of that, I'm quite cool. I don't know if you've got anything instead.
With these the green ones,
the green and white. Yeah,
there's a couple of them which I'm told are fake.
Okay. I'm going to need that not to be Indy Kyler. Is that right?
No, it's not Indy Kyler. There's a guy on Twitter who is always the guy who leaks the kits every year, but he doesn't totally. He gets a look at them, and then he normally passes that on to a designer who creates an interpretation based on what he's seen. Okay. And he said the two ones, which are like the mad paint striped green things, are just not right at all. They're like... that it's what happens every year as well, which is why it's hilarious when you go on like the H Gate in the summer and you can get not Liverpool, you can get things that lads on Twitter have just made up, and then someone sees that and makes it into a template and then starts selling it. Like the white away kit from this season, at the start of the season, I saw dozens and dozens of fake versions of that when it didn't have the mad pattern on it. But it was a similar thing, but it was miles off. Anyway, I think you'd be all right.
Good, I'm glad.
But I don't know what it looks like. It might be shit still.
I'm cool then, in that case.
I will forego my agony rant and I'll give it to Jürgen Klopp. Okay. And I will preach on his behalf about the lad who nearly took Andy Robbo and Curtis Jones out.
Yeah.
Jürgen was furious. He was getting. Gross, yeah. We just scored the seventh goal against Man United and the manager was going absolutely apeshit. Yeah, stay off the pitch. If you're gonna go on the pitch and run around and get yourself involved, then Sam, whatever, stay with the players, please.
Yeah.
Don't injure us.
He
nearly took Andy Robbo's fucking leg off.
Yeah.
Jürgen was absolutely livid to me. I've forgiven my agony rant. I've handed it to Jürgen and I've allowed him to preach. Because that was fucking silly, that. Imagine he'd have took two of our lads out. Poor Curtis Jones, when he just come back onto the team, he's got fucking stress fractures in his legs or something, and some lad just comes and wipes him out with the team.
It would be a very Curtis Jones thing to happen, wouldn't it, if he was to get injured like that?
Somehow Naby Keita's out for a month now. After that clash of the world that's happened.
It's funny, isn't it, though? It's like, there's a mo, because when I immediately see it, my first reaction is to laugh, because we're beating Man United 7-0, and someone's just gone wild and just wants to go and hug the players. But it's the perfect example of like why you don't, because two reasons. Like again, one of the main reasons why you're not allowed is just like that could be fucking any lunatic, and I know this sounds like the kind of thing my mum would say based off something that someone shared on their Facebook feed, but if someone ran on with a knife, and you know what I mean, because lunatic mean like not to go all it, but like it's a gun, but like John Lennon gets killed in a crowd of people.
What happened
in the
tennis with Monica Seles?
Exactly. And that can happen, and that's why you don't. And I know it's cute when kids run on and all that kind of stuff. It has its moments. And if he ends up in the crowd and he's just hugging them, it could be quite a funny little thing. But I mean, fucking Alison Becker fell over three times in the game. Where let alone some lad running on in his
grapes
or whatever, like, you know what I mean? it's not a great look. But I mentioned this on the last Fan Standard show, which is coming out this week, is that this happened to Adrian in the Super Cup. He played with like ankle strapping on the game after the Super Cup, because someone ran on the pitch, slipped and took him out. And like, imagine losing Andy Robertson for the rest of the season to an ankle ligament injury because you've just fucking ran on the pitch. And I know it could be a great moment, it could be this and that, but that's the balance. And is it worth it? No. I agree. That's a bit fucking stupid as far as I'm concerned. Anyone else?
Fans who take calls during games. I was sat next to a bloke who took two phone calls during the game, including trying to FaceTime the match to somebody. Absolutely bizarre. And then that stupid chant, "Who are you?" when we scored against Wolves in the far upper.
Yeah,
that can get in the bin, can't it?
Yeah, that absolutely can get in the bin. I think we had a couple of those where, again, it's like people. I've done this a lot recently. I don't like to. It's not like a. It's not about where you're from or blah blah blah. But there is a thing of somewhat getting education from the cop. There's just things we don't sing as Liverpool fans. There's ways we don't act or behave, and it's like. It's part of the culture of the football club.
Mm-hmm.
makes us different, and you don't get to pick and choose. That's why you don't sing, is this a library, or, you know, is there a fragile...
Or your shit ass or a goal.
Oh, a goal, that's the worst.
God. And there's
that's the worst.
There's just things that are just... Well, it's just wool behaviour, you know what I mean? Or it's stereotypical fucking modern football fan behaviour, and that's what stands us apart, is that we don't have to have the same identical things as everyone else. So, yeah. It leads into mine, playing banners. Come back on me, please, Aaron. I'm going to start this off by saying everyone has a right to protest. You can protest whatever you want. Fill your boots, protest away. Why I don't like playing banners as a method of protest, because protest has to be a two-way thing for me. You've got, and I know, and I understand that not people can't get to Liverpool to protest, and that's a thing. And so you feel removed, and you feel like you've got to do something to take action so you can get your voice heard. I appreciate that. I do. I genuinely feel that. You feel a disconnect, and so you know you have to find some way to get your voice out there. Why I don't look, there was a playing banner protesting FSG. It's not the first group of people to do that. There was one a few years back as well. The problem with doing that is that it removes people's right to reply, and I think it tarnishes an entire fan base with a brush, or what it's done is it's actually tarnished probably quite a few sensible people who've been swept up in a thing and feeling like it's part of a wider, much grander issue than it actually is, or movement, sorry, than it is, not the issue. When you go to the ground and you protest, if people disagree with your protest, they tell you. And they get to do it, and you get to have your beliefs questioned back, and then you get to go, based on the response from that, maybe I'm not right here. Maybe I've got the wrong end of the stick or whatever. And I remember when we were protesting Hicks and Gillette, hundreds of people would turn up at Anfield, and they'd stand there in unity, and they'd do the chanting, and they made banners and songs and football shirts and stuff, and they had people go back at them, what the fuck are you doing? Get behind the team, fucking criticise it. And they were right to protest, because it was Hicks and Gillette, and they needed to protest, and we needed to get them out of the club, because they were bleeding Liverpool Football Club dry. When you do playing banners, I get it. It's an avenue for expression, and an avenue for protest. But it's faceless. It's another faceless example.
That's my
of protest.
Thing as well, mate. Is that, like, I think if you're going to protest something, you need to be at your protest. And unless it was the fella flying the aeroplane who decided to protest that, like, that's valid. Listen, if you're against the owners, your fault, whatever it is, that's absolutely fine. But I don't think, I'm not sure having a protest that you're not at, or if there's a group of people who want to have a protest, if you're not there, I think that it almost cheapens it a little bit as well. Because, like I say, there's no legs behind it, you know what I mean? Fair enough, I think it was crowdfunded, am I saying? Or it was
well, I don't know.
I think that was what it was, but like that's not like you, if you want to go and protest against the owners or whoever it is, go and fill your boots. You are more than welcome to do it. Mm-hmm. But if you're not there, I think that kind of, I don't know, if it kind of cheapens the message, because then it's like, well, is there one person who thinks this? Is there a million people who think this? Is there 1,000 people who think this? We don't know. Like, there are people, there are definitely people who are in that camp of, like, they are staunch, like, we will get rid of these owners by hook or by crook. That's fine, fill your books. I think they should sell the club, but it looks like they're not going to. I'm not quite there where I don't think I would be able to process about it just yet. Personally, that's my thoughts. But everyone's different. Everyone can do what they want. But I think, I don't know, like, in general, I don't like playing banners for anything, really. Sometimes they can be a bit funny, if it's like, you know, like if you even then, no, not in fact, no, they're just a bit shit. I just don't get the point, because, like I say, I think it cheapens your message, because if it's your protest and you've got a group of people behind your protest, the best thing you can do to do your protest is to show your strength in numbers. Get out there with your banners, with your chants, with your songs. Walk out the ground on 77 minutes like people did for tickets. There's ways you can do it. I'm not sure, like, you're getting your message across in the right way by paying one fella a grand or whatever to go and fly an airplane above roof. But what it has done, it's got them. Listen, it was on every journalist tweeted about it. It was in newspapers. We're talking about it now, so it has garnered some attention.
It got them laughed at by journalists is the thing, and it makes collectively the fan base look a bit fucking stupid, because when you start to go to external scrutiny of it, it's all right, all well and good when everyone's sat in little rooms or in Twitter spaces or whatever, or online in forums, hyping yourself up and, like, you know, getting yourself pumped up for it. But it's then when you take that opinion to the wider world, the wider football community is looking at it and going, oh, what are you doing?
Look, I saw some people who were for it, but I've seen a lot of people who were against it. And I've seen people who I know would like the owners to sell. I'm not going to name names because it's not fair on them, because I haven't asked permission. But like, you were like, I would like them to sell, but that was fucking embarrassing, that. Or that was cringy. Like, oh, we don't do that. That's generally the response I've had, because I think there are a lot of people who are like, the ownership is a big issue going forwards. But like, I know a lot of people who would probably maybe not join in a process, but maybe sit and applaud it or go, you know what, fair enough, you're doing it for yourselves. I know personally at least four people who I'm in WhatsApp groups with who don't particularly like that. Well, it's only four, don't you? Like, it's not a big, who were like, yeah, but my God, that's fucking shit, that's cringy, that's cheesy, that, who didn't like it. So, but yeah, it's as a concept, playing banners as protesters is just a bit shit.
Yeah, it is. And as I say, it's very modern, and it's not the first time we've had this for years. It's the same as, like, it's hashtags and playing banners are all the same thing. They're not real. It's the same as like changing putting a new badge on your avatar to you know, to say I'm dead behind Ukraine. It's like, oh yeah, like, that's cool, because we can have these things, and we can generally tell the world or know what our stance is on things. But this is like, this is different. This has got to go beyond that. If you want protest and you want change, it's got to be physical. And I know there's people who can't do it, but you've got to. But that's unfortunately what it's going to be. It's passive aggressive as it is at the moment, which typifies the whole response, to be honest, because the whole thing is passive aggressive, because it's lots of snide comments online and all this kind of stuff, and people taking shots and stuff. But I don't like them. That's my agony around this.
By playing manners.
I think they're just an extension of hashtags, which is to say, You can't organise enough physical people to get behind something, so you've done something that, and again, with it being faces, it could be anyone. I know there's a general sense that this is people online, but there's no, and eventually proof might out itself, people might have the receipt or whatever, but anyone can put a playing banner up. I could get one over Old Trafford for next week if I wanted to, Shane Glazer's in, if I really fancied it for a fucking laugh. And that goes back to it. There's got to be a face behind this. It's got to be a real movement. If it's as big as it's claimed, then there will be people in Liverpool, and there will be people who are in travelling distance who are passionate enough about it to come. Because when there's not a million Liverpool fans in Liverpool, but when we win trophies, a million people will come and line the street to Liverpool because they feel passionately about it. It stands to reason we should be able to muster 1,000 people or 100 people or 50 people together to go and be the physical face of this, rather than doing this stuff that makes us all look a bit fucking
stupid. It's not reading the room, is it? Because to those people that don't need an excuse, it becomes a sweeping generalisation of what Liverpool fans think to those people looking at it from social media platforms. And we've all said it, and it's true, the guys that go to the game are not the people that sit on social media casting judgments on everything that the owners do. So I'm with you. It's an abomination. I really can't stand it.
We'll never know now, because the season's been a bit of a fucking shambles, and we don't know how it's going to go on from here on in. But it's interesting that more and more stuff's come out about, like, how they got pre-season wrong and how, you know, and they're hoping to put that right this time around. And it does make you wonder that if they'd just been made better decisions in pre-season, would we have had less injury problems, which mean all of the issues around the transfers and all that would have been less exacerbated. Liverpool would have had a better season, and none of this would have reared its head to the extent that it has. We'll never know that, but my overriding sense is a lot of this has been born of Liverpool not being good on the pitch, because it feeds the idea that the owners haven't invested enough. And nobody thinks the owners have invested too much money, by the way. And I don't think there's many people who think they've invested an adequate amount of money in the playing squad. But when Liverpool are capable of winning stuff on the pitch, then you can't argue with the results of it. So that's one of the things that's undercut. But for me, on the whole thing, just to sort of wrap up for me on it anyway, is like, when you follow them up for long enough, you tend to just, the stuff you just need to let breathe. And that's the problem with FSG, is they very rarely do anything that requires you. Well, when they, well, actually, tell a lie, they do things all the time that require you to fucking stand up and fucking shout for it. And my God, we've done that on more than a handful of opportunities. But most of the time when it comes to how they manage the club, it's like watching fucking clouds move across the sky, or watching, you know, icebergs move around and stuff. You've kind of just got to let it play out, because if they get it right in the summer and they go, but Liverpool are able to compete again, what's the point? What's the difference of them and a new ownership group? That doesn't make any difference to me anyway. Before we get into Bournemouth, Aaron, have we got the laptop? Yes. So we've got some celebratory merch available right now. Not only have we got obviously t-shirts for the new front three, we've got Cody Gakpo, we've got Darwin Nunes, and we've got the King range, including Mo Salah. We have got a magnificent seven t-shirt, which is celebrating, of course, Liverpool scoring seven goals against Manchester United at home. Wonderful stuff, of course, based on the old Western, of course, and that itself based on the old samurai film. There is that. There is also, that's available, I believe we've got that on a mug as well, but in addition, we've got a brand new mug as well that has just dropped. In addition to our Since 1995, Let's Laugh at Jordan Pickford mug, the Magnificent Seven is available as a mug, and we've got our Cara 7 Nev Nil mug as well, which has just this minute dropped on the redmenmerch.com. So I'm sure you'll have seen it. And we didn't really mention it enough. The look from Jamie Carragher on that cam, that's watching the commentary cam, when he realises Neville's face and he just sees it as social gold.
Like the office.
And yeah, he just looks and he just smirks at the camera. Well, it's that on a mug with the scoreboard there.
It's the
as well.
Sequel to Ferguson and Kenny. Yeah. Kenny, yeah. It's the follow up. It's the difficult B album. But I reckon we've nailed it.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Kavis sees that moment, hasn't he? He's seen that play out in his head. And he's gone, this is me.
Just before, he's taking a selfie of him as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he realizes, doesn't he? He looks at the camera. Realises Nev, smiles, and then takes the selfie. It is a glorious moment played out in real time. It's a soap opera played out before our eyes. And those wondering, the original of this, going back to last season, beating Man United 5-0, is still available on the store as well, which is Fergie and Kenny, which is absolutely great. Yes, they are available right now, redmenmerch.com. If you listen to this in podcast form, go and check out redmenmerch.com. Have a little snoop around, because we've got some boss stuff on there for some of the new players, some of the old players, some of the legends, and of course, if you happen to work somewhere where you've got Evertonians or Manx around you, and you just want to casually sit back and have a little sip, say nothing, let the mug do your talking for you. Speaking of passive aggression, if you're going to passive aggressive, do it to someone's face. That's what I'd say. That's the right kind of, that's the right kind of, at least they've got the right to reply. They can call you a twat to your face, and you can just have another sip.
Or shout at a plane, you twat.
Yeah, yeah. Right, let's briefly talk then about Bournemouth, Steve Plunk. Yeah, I don't really want to get too into it, because we've got a whole week of basking in Manchester United's defeat. But the next two games before the break, because obviously, you know, the Fulham game's been moved because of the FA Cup progression from them. And we've got something like a 17-day break of football after the Real Madrid game. But there's a chance with the way things have fallen. You know, Liverpool could go into that break. It's a big ask for a variety of reasons. We could go into that break in the top four and into the quarterfinals of the Champions League. Huge ask, but that's what the next two games are for Liverpool.
Yeah, I think the fourth place one's more likely to
hell
of an overturn, wouldn't it, in the Bernabeu? That would eclipse
that's why he's the market manager. He makes sensible decisions. Yeah. Like, we're booking fucking trips to Istanbul after yesterday.
No, steady on, guys, steady
on. Fucking idiot. That's why we had to get him in. Yeah, he has a calm and influence.
Yeah, I think you've ruined me with that one. I think the Bournemouth thing is the big one, isn't it? Realistically, that's an opportunity to get into fourth place. We come back from the break and then we've got the week from hell. So we need to make it count now. And, you know, they're in the bottom three. We need to go there. We need to focus. We need to get the result. And we need to get the points on the board. It is a game that... they're all must-win games now. But it's a really cliched thing to say. You can't beat Man United at 7-0 at home and then go to Bournemouth and not get another 3 points. It kind of becomes pointless then, doesn't it?
It also makes sense. Again, I don't really want to look too far there, but what we can look at is what that result from Man United did for the league and what the weekend as a whole. Now, we've got the Bias Football podcast later where we can look at our rivals. But like the fact that Spurs lose, Manchester City lose, and then we go and Newcastle get beaten by Manchester City rather, and then we can go and absolutely wipe the floor with Man United. Tottenham and Newcastle will be like, oh no. Ah, for fuck's sake.
Yep.
You know, that they've all been like, almost. It's almost been like, kind of forgot about Liverpool. I think everyone's kind of had Liverpool in the rearview mirror, but we haven't done anything to justify like worrying them, you know what I mean? It's a bit like, I don't want to spoil anymore, it's the recent episode of The Last of Us, but like, it keeps showing the door, and you think the fella's going to run through it, and he just never turns up for a while, and then eventually like this fella comes. It's been a bit like that, where we're just waiting for Liverpool, and here they come. Here they come down the rails. Oh, and by the way, they're about to get all the good lads back fit again. And here they come. And he'd done this before. And we've done this in the COVID season where, you know, Liverpool come down the rails and got there. And we've done it again last season where they went unbeaten for the entire second half of the campaign in the league. Like, this is what they do.
Yep.
And so you're right. It starts with United, but Bournemouth, it has to be a win. Because it just has to be. You can't afford. There's too many difficult games ahead of that for that not to be. We have to win that. But I bet your Tottenham and Newcastle fans, in particular, and the football club as a whole, are thinking, ah, fuck, it's these again.
Yeah.
These are coming now. And that would be like, it's a bit like when we were top of the league, mate, the Man City were 5 points behind with a game in hand, and we'd drop a point and they'd win. Ah, here's these come now. Here's where they're going to take their chance. That's what they should be thinking.
We need to just get a run of form. And I look. If Liverpool are a team that's going to finish fourth in the league, Dan, we're not going to win every game between now and the end of the season. We're not. We're going to draw games and we're going to lose games because that's what happens. Everyone stumbles, trips, and you end up just about dragging yourself over the line at the end. However, if Liverpool are able to get themselves back to a proximity of the level they've been at in recent years, then they need to, that's what I'm saying, we need to go and beat Bournemouth and then put the pressure on everyone else and be that like just like heavy breathing, heavy running force that's you know, when like trying to run when someone's stomping behind you, having them look over the shoulders at every given moment. That's what Bournemouth will allow us to do.
Yeah, 100% it will. I think Steve's point is a good one. It's one I made a few weeks ago on the podcast, and when we kind of started to turn the corner a little bit, started to turn the ship around, that teams who were sort of occupying our spots, if you like, Newcastle and Spurs in particular, would have been looking over their shoulder just a little bit and going, ah, Liverpool getting their act together down there, that's slightly concerning. Yeah. And now all of a sudden that's a real concern for them. I think because we've gone course and distance at this a few times before, you mentioned the COVID season and obviously the league, the times we've won the league or nearly won the league, we've got this in our locker, we've done it before, they haven't necessarily. It's like when Leicester were kind of occupying fourth spot forever and a day and then fell off a cliff at the end.
Yeah.
It feels to me like that could happen again, but in our favour obviously. And I think sort of the psychological impact yesterday would have had on us in a positive sense for our morale. It might have also had a really negative one for United, by the way, and who knows what happens to their season from here on out. That's really interesting. Could well be capitulation. It happened in front of our very eyes yesterday when we dismantled them. But yeah, for me, Bournemouth already has the feel, I know it's only Monday, but it already has the feel of like an after the Lord Mayor show type game, because it is Bournemouth away. It's an early kickoff. But that's exactly the sort of game we need to go there and get through by hook or by crook. It might not be flashy, it might not be fancy. Get the 3 points, get out of there, get off the south coast and get back up to Liverpool. I don't care how it looks anymore, just get away.
It's also Paul there quick to say is that it is the chance to go first. And if you beat Bournemouth rather, Spurs are then playing Forest. Spurs do play Champions League this week as well, so they've got that to contend with. It's a finely balanced.
They don't need more pressure either, do they, on that though?
Newcastle don't play till Sunday. And they play Wolves, you feel like they're starting to get their act together. So all of a sudden, if you win and you are in that fourth position, we would go to fourth when we could be above Spurs on goal difference, I would think.
Yeah.
Go above Spurs on goal difference and then go, right, it's over to you, Sam, we've done our bit. Out you go. What you don't want, because this is where the early kickoff can kill you, is if you go and you don't win, and then they go, fucking hell, here's our chance, right? Let's get that game back, let's get those points back, and just, you know, Liverpool are down, let's try and step on them a little bit. So if you can just go to Bournemouth and do your job, which Liverpool should do, Bournemouth are terrible, and if you can go there and be yours and beat them well, it does automatically, it puts a bit more pressure on two teams who aren't clear of relegation. And actually Forest and Wolves are in relatively decent form for teams down the bottom of the table. So it's a huge, that's why the United game was so big, because I was saying you know, 10 points from the four games that we'd had was good. That was top four form, but you can make it better by going and winning those, you know, those little bonus ones. Because everyone was probably saying, maybe a draw isn't the end of the world, whatever. No, we're just going to beat them.
Yep.
So there's a couple of bonus points there that those other teams were hoping we dropped and we didn't.
The thing that's important about this, and we've got a comment in the Club Legend Discord from Titch Green saying, well, I was going to ask this anyway, but because it's a good point. Jürgen now has the option to cater the team to the game. He's not had that all season. Stephen Harvey in the team for the long haul. No need to burn through them now. But I think that extends to the front three for this game as well. Steve, obviously, it's a week. So, you know, half the squad could be out injured by then. You know what I mean? Because that's how the season's gone. But with Real Madrid then looming in the midweek that follows, you could make two or three changes to that midfield and forward line and actually still be putting out a team that's more than capable of winning either of those games.
Yeah, you could. I certainly think we will in midfield. I don't think we need two sort of defensive midfielders against them because that's not their strength. With regards to the front three, if it were my choice, I'd leave it to start with and try and win the game within the hour and then make the changes, the 60-30 scenario. I think we need to put ourselves in the strongest position to win the game and then think about making the changes. If you go with Jota and Jota has another game where he's feeling his way back into form and it doesn't work for him, the last half an hour becomes a bit frenetic and then you start to panic a little bit and you feel uncomfortable. I've long been an advocate of win the games and then make the changes rather than do it the other way around.
Yeah. It's interesting stuff though, isn't it, Dan? Is that... You know, there's a potential world. I do tend to agree with Steve is that you want to put your best foot forward, but not entirely certain. You know, that this also the point is our best foot forward can look at a couple of different things. You know, we might decide that it is a Jota style player will better suit however Bournemouth are playing. You know, I don't know. Or again, you might be looking at it and going, well, do we need Henderson and Fabinho in this one so Bacetic can come back into this one and that gives Fabinho? Because what I want for Real Madrid, and a lot, we might write that off. You know what I mean? We might not go flat out, but having that break afterwards says to me that give yourself every opportunity there. So I want Henderson and Fabinho with as much in the tank as possible because they're going to be pivotal to us winning the midfield battle in that one. Mm. But yeah, it's nice to be sat here debating these changes to approach and all that because we feel we can win two games or three games in a week as opposed to panicking over how we get one team.
Absolutely. It's nice to have the options to call upon, isn't it? And to have these sort of conversations around who will be tactically suited better to that game than, oh, he's got to play because he's fit. It's like not last man standing territory anymore, is it? Like, and I actually, the Jota one's the interesting one. I actually do wonder whether this is a game you could get Jota back up and running for maybe for the rest of the season because to your point earlier on, Steve, if you do get Diogo Jota back firing all cylinders by some way, shape or form between now and end of the season, he could actually be pivotal for what we can achieve. So I do get that. However, I think I said it yesterday in the build-up show, I'd be tempted just to go all guns blazing for this next one and then Real Madrid. He's not going to write Real Madrid off because it's just not in his mantra. It's not the way he goes about things, and I get that. And fully, what he'd probably more likely to do is try and win the Bournemouth game within the hour, then make his changes and rest his lads, your Hendersons, your Fabinhos, and also do something similar in the Bernabeu, almost give it a go for the hour and see where we're at and then assess from there. And if we're in the game, great, maybe go again, double down on a couple of substitutions. But if not, sort of peel your way back from the game then.
Yeah. Like what Eddie Howe did against Newcastle when they went down to 10, give it a go. I'm like, okay, that's done.
Exactly.
We get all the good lads. But like you say, the fact that we don't play the weekend after helps them with that. Because you can just go, right, listen, we're just going to smoke these two for the last game. Give them 3 or 4 days off on all these before they all have to go jet setting around the world to go and play.
And none of the Brazilian lads got called up, by the way, on that. No, none of the Brazilian lads got called up.
Well, to be fair, what's a fucking surprise? He's been fucking useless. But maybe after yesterday, Fabinho might get a late call. I don't know. But it's an interesting one looking ahead. Like I say, this is the one where you talk about top four form and like, you know, the results where you can get away with losing and you can get away with winning that. Like Bournemouth away has got to be a banker. You've got to go.
Well,
and
we say that, Steve, but I know you do have to.
Okay,
the point it goes back to again. Great win at Anfield. We need to sort the way. This is what sorting the away form looks like.
Yeah.
You need to take what you learned from Crystal Palace and go a bit better. The way that we took our learnings from Real Madrid and went better.
Am I right?
Saying
it's three away on the. It's three away now, isn't it?
It's
Bournemouth, City, Chelsea, all away at our next three league games. To expect 9 points from that. I'm hopeful of it, but you can't expect it.
Oh, yeah.
So you're expecting, you want at least six.
which means, and the three of them just have to come at Bournemouth. They just have to, and then I'd expect to be Chelsea, actually, if Super's all the way. That City one's a big one where you don't want to go into that one chasing the result that you've just lost, you know what I mean? If that makes sense. Because anything can happen. The Etihad games between us and them, who knows how they can plan out. So, yeah, I think the way the weekend panned out, it's happened a couple of weekends now where we've had really good weekends where everyone seems to be dropping points on the Reds, just get the job done.
Well, that's why, all of a sudden we've gone from 10th to we're knocking on the door of the top four with loads of games left to be played. There's the best part of, 40 things, 39 points or something still to be played for.
In terms of the form, guy, now over the last five or six games, like we're right at the top of it again, which is mad. Alisson's only a couple of games off the Golden Gloves again.
He's also mad.
The clean sheets, which is crazy, because it was four now, is it, on the bottom?
Five
clean sheets in the Premier League on the bounce. Like, yeah, things are starting to turn Liverpool's way. The mood music is pointing towards the Reds. I bet now if you asked a lot of neutral fans who's going to come forth, I bet you a lot of fucking Liverpool.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them would do.
Just to say as well, we spoke, I think, last week or the week before in here about our home form being pivotal to what we can achieve in terms of the top four. And we've doubled down on that ourselves recently. Our results at home have been boss. It is, the away form has been a major issue. But to your point, Paul, earlier on about your top four form doesn't need to be perfect. If we can just win all our home games, like realistically, that might well be enough and pick up the odd point here. And you're going to win games on the road. Yeah. But if we can just consistently win at Anfield, we probably get top four on the back of that.
I get that. I think the next four games, next four games changes your mentality a little bit with regards to what Steve said. You don't want to be going into three games after the break, which is, as we know, Chelsea, City and Arsenal, thinking, actually, we dropped the bollock against Bournemouth.
No, we need to recover
some ground. So the Bournemouth game is a win at all costs.
Yeah.
Go and give a good account of yourself at Real Madrid. Have the 17 days off where you say, let's think about it. Possibly six clean sheets in a row. 2 points off maximum, go to Real Madrid, give a really good account of ourselves. You're setting yourself up then for what is the hardest week of the season, where I agree, Chelsea is a game we should be targeting the victory.
I want to be sat here on next Monday being able to go Bernabeu as possible.
Bring him on.
Yeah. and the only way we can do that is if we carry another positive result at the weekend. Absolutely. And I don't think we're going to do it, but it's hope is what it's all about. If you haven't got hope as a football fan, what's the point?
I'll just gibber off.
Genuinely, what's the point? We had loads of super chats. I apologise. We've had some tech issues trying to get them up on the screen. So I've got one. The most recent one is from Robin Hood. $4.99. Thank you so much, Robin. Really enjoyed the Bobby Firmino testimonial yesterday. Yeah, that's good. And there's a bunch which I'll just read through. We can't get these up on screen, unfortunately. But Liam Bento has been a member for 25 months here on YouTube. Says my favourite content is United stand fans claiming that their players are tired, like Liverpool didn't take it to the final day of every comp last year, and also play last weekend and midweek and then into this game the same as United did as well. Yeah. Martin Walls, difference was we have leaders, they don't.
Great point, by the way. Really good point.
Their leader was a fucking rat who jibbed it.
Yeah,
Henderson had by example, couldn't be asked.
Hala Madrid, and I want everyone to remember this comment, by the way, says it's funny how you can never beat us, Hala Madrid.
Okay.
All right, Eric. Interesting.
People saying stuff before the bug game doesn't often come back to bite them on the arse, so yeah, that's fine.
And there's no form for Real Madrid giving it to Billy Biggins before the Real Madrid game as well. Yeah. Like, I mean, so
all comments like that should be made to read Sergio Busquets' last tweet.
Yeah, they should.
Marley Clark says, imagine being Harvey 7-0 over the Manx. Come on, Reds. Absolutely. Will Smith asks the question, why can't we ever beat Real Madrid, though? Yeah, exactly.
Cross that bridge when we get to it. It should be my eyes, 7-0.
Yeah.
Fucking shut up.
Ashby, I'm loving how salty United fans are. Mr. Housen calling it our cup final whilst looking like he's had the worst day of his life warmed my heart. I know. Seeing Steve Housen, and I've friends before, me and Steve have got a good relationship. He's actually a good fella when we're not talking about Liverpool and Man United. But seeing him upset because he's the ultimate face of the Manx. Like Adam McCullough, I've got a similar relationship, better relationship with Adam Gold, but it's similarly. The fact that Housen is a Manx makes it all the sweeter because we're just two diametrically opposed peoples, the Manx and the Scousers, so seeing upset Manx in that regard,
might as well be Celtic.
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Right, okay, just quickly before we head off, we have got the Bias Football podcast to come immediately after this on redmenplus.com. We are going to be looking at some of the action from the weekend. We're going to be talking Arsenal's last gasp winner. We're going to talk about Man City really giving it their all in the title race and how that's probably giving them both loads of stress, which is kind of nice watching other people go through that, not us, although I'd quite rather it be us. We're going to have a lap at Everton drawing to Nottingham Forest. Not because it's any shame in not beating them, Nottingham Forest, at their ground.
The fortress that is fortress the city ground.
They've lost there since September, to be fair.
It is funny because, you know, the balance of the draws, if you concede the last goal, then you've basically lost, haven't you? We're going to have a little laugh again at Chelsea Football Club and probably Spurs as well and all that good stuff. So come and join us over there. We've got a code for you guys. If you want to go to redmenplus.com, click join today, click monthly club captain subscription and use the code BIASED, BIASED, all caps. What is the offer, Steve Hall?
Well played. I thought you were going to give something away then. If you sign up, yeah, you will get £3 off a month for the first 3 months. So basically, you'll pay £2 a month. £2 a month for 3 months. Get yourselves involved. So yeah, code BIASED, Redmen Plus Monthly Club Captain. And yeah, £2 a month for the first 3 months. Bargain. It's more than half price.
Well, effectively, you're getting that show for 50p, but you're not, because if you divide that amount by all the shows, you're getting it for like 0.001 pence or whatever. But in reality, if you just want the BIASED Football Show, which is an extension of this podcast with us talking about Premier League stuff, effectively that's how it works out. So yeah, use the code BIASED, get a huge discount on your Redmen Plus subscription, and also fill your boots on Boss Liverpool post-match content. We've got the instant match reaction, we've got the final word, and the In the Ground podcast. Three shows all there to just revel in the Manx salty tears. Oh, great stuff.
I feel so happy today, Paul.
It's so good.
It's funny, isn't it?
It's so good.
Our mood changes.
Yeah. Right. That is it from us. As I say, plenty more post Liverpool United content. If you want more, we've got you covered. Do go and check it out. Other than that, have a wonderful week, everyone. And we're back with another Redmen Originals podcast, hopefully with all our plans for how we're going to beat Real Madrid next week. Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you want even more Bosch content and podcasts just like this, go over to redmenplus.com and sign up now.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.